We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
ATA for cheating on my boyfriend after he was going to donate a kidney to me? I never imagined I'd need an organ donation to stay alive, much less that it would come from the man I once looked at and thought, with him, I have it all. We've been sharing an apartment for nearly a year. Nothing glamorous. A small place in a slightly run-down neighborhood, with a leaky faucet, mismatched thrift store pillows, and houseplants that seemed determined to die on us. But it was our sanctuary, and we were deeply in love. We were the couple that made other people a little jealous. We'd crack up at the dumbest jokes, had shared Spotify playlists, and mused about names for kids we weren't even sure we'd ever have. E. Michael was the kind of guy who'd give you the shirt off his back and never expect a thank you. He was always present, always listened, always had my back. And I just felt incredibly lucky to have found him. Until everything shattered. One night, I ventured out for a stupid craving, artisanal chocolate chip cookies from that bakery downtown. It was pouring rain, but I dashed across the street anyway, not looking properly. A cab, its headlights off, materialized out of the downpour, a split second of carelessness and then blackness. I woke up in the hospital 3 days later, a tangle of tubes and monitors, feeling like life itself, not just a car, had run me over. The first thing I saw was Michael's face, pale, with deep shadows under his eyes, gripping my hand as if his sheer will could keep me tethered to this world. He was crying, but he managed a smile as if the worst was over. It wasn't. The accident caused severe internal injuries. My legs, though fractured, eventually healed, but my kidneys started to fail, slowly at first, then more rapidly. The doctors laid it out straight. Without a transplant, my time was limited. Maybe months, maybe less. My parents got tested, no match. My aunts, uncles, cousins, nothing. And then Michael, without a moment's hesitation, said, "Test me. If I'm a match, you can have my kidney." "Yeah, right," I chuckled, thinking he was being overly dramatic, one of those.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Grand, impossible romantic gestures. But he was serious. And he was a match. I broke down. I clung to his chest like a terrified child. He stroked my hair, murmuring, "We're going to beat this. You just have to hold on a little longer. I need to get healthier. They want me to lower my cholesterol, build up some muscle, but as soon as they give the go-ahead, the kidney is yours. It's yours. He said it so simply, as if he were offering me a precious jewel, not a part of his own body. And I believed him. I believed every word. But as time wore on, instead of improving, I started to fade. The crushing fatigue, the endless dialysis appointments, the pitying stares, the constant hospital visits. I began to feel less like a woman, less like a person, less worthy. My reflection in the mirror was a stranger, sallow skin, dark circles, bones too prominent. Michael was still there with flowers, with encouraging voicemails, with four smiles, but I couldn't stand for him to see me like that anymore. I didn't want him to watch me waste away. And gradually I started to push him away. First, I stopped returning some texts, then I asked him not to visit so often. I told him I needed space, quiet, time to process. It was a lie. What I really wanted was to disappear. Because as much as I loved him, I also resented him. For still being healthy, for still being strong, whole. For not syncing with me. He didn't push back. He said he'd respect my space, that he'd be nearby if I needed him, that he wouldn't abandon me. But I abandoned him anyway. I moved out of our apartment, back into my parents' house, into a guest room bed where the woman I used to be no longer fit. And from then on, there was only distance. That was all that existed between us. Not just physical miles, but that hollow void that can wedge itself between two people even when they're inches apart. He kept sending messages, voice notes, old photos of us, things like, made your favorite mac and cheese today. Let it get cold without realizing. Dreamed about you, you were healthy, you were laughing. I love you, that's all. I read every single one. I listened to his voice notes at night, like someone torturing themselves with a familiar scent that no longer belongs to them. But I never replied, because I didn't know how to explain that I loved him, but I couldn't bear to be loved like that anymore. My mother tried to keep my spirits up, talking about new treatments, waiting lists, telling me I needed to stay positive. Jessica, my best friend, however, had zero patience for it. How long are you going to wallow in this victim mode? She demanded one afternoon, yanking the comforter off me as if it were a shroud. Are you just going to let yourself die? Don't you get it? I mumbled no. Then explain to me why you walked out on the only man willing to literally give a part of himself to save you. Because he loves you too damn much. Because he didn't run when you started to smell like antiseptic? I didn't answer. We're going out tonight. And I'm not taking no for an answer. I didn't have the energy to argue. I put on something passable, did my makeup as best as my trembling hands allowed, and went out for the first time in weeks. The bar was one of those trendy spots where the music was loud enough to feel a vibe, but not too loud to talk. Reclaimed wood tables, Edison bulb lighting, the scent of expensive colognes, and craft IPAs. Jessica introduced me to her friends as if I were a war hero. This is Sarah, the one I told you about, the fighter, the one who's putting herself back together. I felt like a complete fraud. Then Ryan arrived. I noticed him the moment he walked in, that kind of effortless presence that commands a room. Tall, a bit ruggedly handsome, with eyes that seemed to be constantly assessing everything. He greeted me like he already knew me. So you're the famous Sarah. Famous for what? For still being in the fight when everyone expects you to tap out. I laughed. He did too. Jessica made sure he sat next to me. After a couple of beers I stuck to water, we were talking as if the rest of the world had faded away. Ryan didn't ask about the accident, or why my skin looked so washed out, or why he touched my arm so gently, as if I might shatter. He looked at me like I wasn't already broken. Sometimes you have to burn it all down, he told me, his voice low, even if it's just to see what's left standing in the ashes. I didn't know what to say. Later, he offered me a ride home. I accepted. We didn't talk much in the car, just listened to music. He had a playlist of intense indie rock that seemed to articulate all my unspoken pain. When we got to his apartment building, he invited me up. I said no, then yes. Everything happened in a blur, yet in slow motion, his hands, his mouth, his skin against mine. I didn't think about anything. Not Michael, not the kidney, not the hospital. I just craved that, to feel desired, to feel alive, even for a moment. Afterward, while he slept, I went to the bathroom. I stared at my reflection, smudged mascara, haunted eyes. I felt disgusting. Not for being with him, but because I knew that, somewhere, Michael was probably dreaming of me while I was busy destroying everything good we ever had. I crept home before sunrise. I stripped off my clothes and stood under the scalding shower as if I could wash away the guilt. The next day, another message from Michael popped up. They greenlit the first stage. If everything keeps going well, in a few months I can be your donor. I'm hitting the gym, eating clean, all for you. I love you. I sank to the floor, phone clutched in my hand, my heart feeling like a heavy, sodden lump. I didn't reply. I loved him, but I'd already betrayed him. And though I tried to tell myself it was a moment of madness, a mistake, a human reaction to unbearable pressure, I knew, deep down, that what I had done was irreparable. And that's when the real chill set in. Cold. That's what I felt when I opened his next message. Not because he was cold, but because I no longer knew how to receive so much love without feeling utterly unworthy. It was a voice note. His voice sounded bright, hopeful. He told me about his latest checkup, the nutritionist, the personal trainer he'd hired, all to be in peak condition to save me. They said if I keep this up, we could schedule the surgery in a month. You have no idea how happy that made me. All for you, for us, for us. And there I was, figuratively naked in someone else's life, listening to that like an old favorite song you can no longer stand to hear. 3 days crawled by. I tried to type out a reply. I couldn't. Every word felt like a lie. And then without warning he showed up. He knocked on the door of my parents' house. My mom rushed upstairs to tell me he was downstairs, that he wouldn't leave without talking to me, that he was holding a small box. I went down. There he was. Thinner, with those familiar dark circles. But his eyes shone with the same unwavering faith he'd had from day one. "I brought you this," he said, holding out the box. "I don't want you to feel pressured, it's just something I feel." He opened it. A ring. "I want to marry you. I don't know if we'll have a lot of time or a little. But if there's one thing that gives my life meaning right now, it's this. Sharing my life, my organs, my days with you." I had to sit down. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't keep pretending. He awkwardly got down on one knee, smiled, waited. And I shattered everything. "I can't." "Why?" he asked, his voice barely a whisper, as if he couldn't even conceive of a reason. "Why?" "Because I did something horrible." He went still. The world seemed to stop making noise. "Is there someone else?" he asked, his tone so gentle it hurt more than if he'd screamed. I couldn't lie. I didn't want to. I nodded. His eyes filled with tears. He slowly closed the box. He stood up, not looking at me. "It was just once." "Yes. Do you care about him?" I shook my head. "No." "Then why did you do it?" And that's when I completely broke. Because I felt dead already. Because I needed someone to touch me and not see a sick person. Because I wanted to know if I was still desirable. The silence that followed was worse than any blow. "And me," he whispered. "What was I lacking? What wasn't I doing for you?" I didn't know what to say. Nothing would have been enough. He turned to leave. "Wait," I choked out. "The transplant. I have a date. The hospital is going to call you." He just stopped. He turned back. And for the first time in this whole nightmare, his voice was laced with pure, unadulterated hatred. "Do you really think I'm going to let you live with a part of me inside you after this? No. Call it spite. Not cowardice, not selfishness. And you know what? Just die." And he walked out. He blocked me everywhere. Texts, Instagram, Facebook, everything. I called voicemail. I texted him from a burner app. He blocked that too. I went to his apartment. He wouldn't open the door. I felt like I was drowning on dry land. Jessica came over that night. She found me on the floor, a sobbing wreck. "Did you tell him?" she asked, her voice flat. I nodded. "And he told you to die? What were you expecting? A hug and a cookie?" I didn't answer. I didn't want to hear any more. The person who promised to give me life now just wanted me to stop breathing. Die. Die. That word echoed in my mind, a filthy reverberation in the following days. I woke up with it lodged in my throat, went to sleep with it pressing on my chest. And a part of me was starting to believe it. I tried not to call him, not to text him anymore. But the body, when it's sick, clings to fear, to habit, to love, even when it's unrequited. So I did what I shouldn't have, what every broken person does when they see no other way out. I reached out to Ryan. I texted him. "I'm not okay, really not okay. I need to talk to someone. Can we meet?" Took him a day to reply. He just said, "Come over." I went. I needed a place where I could stop feeling like the sky was falling. When he opened the door, there was no smile, no enthusiasm, just that uncomfortable, guarded look men get when they sense trouble brewing. "You okay?" he asked, though he clearly knew the answer. "No. It's about your ex." I nodded. Can I just stay for a bit? He hesitated, then let me in. We sat, said little. I was trembling, my whole body ached. I felt like every cell was screaming in protest. I told him about the accident, the transplant, the rejection, and then I saw his face change. You mean you're sick? Yes, seriously. I'm on a waiting list for a kidney, but he was my only match. I can't count on that anymore. He physically shifted a few inches away on the couch, as if my illness were contagious. And what do you want me to do about that? I broke down. Nothing, just don't leave me alone right now. There was a long, heavy silence. Look, he finally said. I don't want to sound cruel, but this isn't what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a project or a burden. I don't want someone who lives in hospitals or this kind of intensity. What we had was a thing that happened, but it's not my life. I was speechless, as if someone had ripped the words from my soul. Sorry, really, but don't drag me into this. And I left. Not crying, not screaming, just hollow. I got home and collapsed. Jessica came to see me later. She walked in with takeout bags, a tube of lipstick, and a forced cheerful tone. I don't feel like talking, I told her. I found out about everything. How? Someone told me that you went to see Ryan. What did he tell you? Who told you? She didn't answer. I glared at her, fury building. Then it clicked. It was her. She had been the go-between, the one who told Ryan. The one who feigned concern while leaking my private hell. It was you. You told him. Jessica crossed her arms. Yes. And I don't regret it. Why? Because he deserved to know what he was walking into. Because you were using him as some kind of emotional crutch. Because you weren't going to stop yourself. I struggled to my feet. I felt nauseous, dizzy, incandescent with rage. I threw a pillow at her. Get out. You're a traitor. She stood her ground as if she'd expected this. I love you, Sarah, but I'm not going to watch you destroy yourself or drag other people down with you. I'm not going to be your accomplice. And she left. She didn't come back that night. My nose started bleeding. It wouldn't stop. They rushed me to the ER again. Advanced renal collapse, a raging infection, emergency stabilization. I was unconscious for almost a day. When I woke up, I was hooked up to more machines than I could count. No one was in the room. The doctor explained that the transplant list was long, that my body was deteriorating too quickly, that I needed a donor like yesterday or there wouldn't be a next stage. I asked him if Michael, my ex, had responded to the hospital's calls. He shook his head. He asked us not to contact him anymore. He said he's no longer part of the process. That's when I truly shattered. I asked for paper and a pen. I wrote a letter to him. I'm not going to beg you, I'm not going to make excuses. I just wanted to say that if I don't make it out of this, thank you for everything you were. I ruined it. I ruined myself. I hope you find someone who sees you the way I should have always seen you. I didn't send it. I tore it into 100 tiny pieces. I called Ryan. His number was disconnected or had blocked me. I texted Jessica. Done. I called Michael's number from the hospital landline. Straight to voicemail, mailbox full. Total deafening silence. And that's how I understood. I was utterly alone. No love. No support. No options. Irreplaceable. That's how I felt. Not like a lost treasure, but like a mistake no one wants to repeat. I'm in a hospital bed, hooked up to machines that beep like metronomes for a life I no longer conduct. My skin feels like it's on fire, my veins are shot. Everything is in monumental effort. Breathing, thinking, not crying. Today they told me my body is failing faster than expected. That they don't know if I can last another week without a transplant. That I should make peace with whoever I need to. Peace? With whom? There's no one left. Ryan ghosted me. Jessica has me blocked. My parents are here, of course, but I look at them and just feel a crushing wave of shame, of guilt. They just wanted a daughter who was alive and happy. And I managed to extinguish every spark I had left. And Michael? He no longer exists for me. Not in this version of the story. I tried everything. I texted him from different apps, sent emails from new accounts, messages with fake names. Even a kind nurse at the hospital tried to call him, per protocol. Nothing. Zero. Complete void. I found out, through a mutual acquaintance, that he donated his kidney to a 27-year-old woman, someone from his church group, a stranger but alive thanks to him. I can't stop thinking about that it could have been me, that it's not me anymore. I stare at the acoustic tile ceiling and repeat the same questions to myself over and over. Why is this happening to me? What did I do that was so unforgivable? Do I really deserve to die like this? And at the same time, another voice, colder and more honest, answers me. It wasn't for what you did, it was for what you didn't do when you still had the chance. You didn't listen. You didn't care enough. You didn't respond. You didn't love the way you should have. You just expected everything and everyone to be there waiting for you, until one day they weren't. There's a call button next to my bed. If I press it, a nurse or aide comes. Sometimes I wait hours to press it, because I don't want anyone to see me like this. Because I know I'm no longer a person. I'm a burden, a clinical case, a room number. I'm still waiting. Not for the kidney, not for forgiveness. Just for something. A gesture, a sign, a word. Sometimes I dream that Michael walks through that door. That he sees me, that he sits beside me, strokes my hair and says, "I forgive you." But then I wake up, and there's only the rhythmic hum of the life support machine. The four-bag dripping, the sterile smell of disinfectant. I wonder if anyone will ever read this. If anyone will understand that there aren't always clear villains and heroes. Sometimes there are just choices and consequences and time which waits for no one. I don't know if I'm going to make it out of this. But if I don't, I hope at least someone hears this story and doesn't make the same mistakes. I hope someone answers that text before it's too late, or hugs the one they love before they grow cold, or values what they have before it withers away. Because I have no one left to write to, and it's already far too late. If you liked it, don't forget to leave a comment and support the channel by subscribing. See you in the upcoming stories.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.